First case this morning is Mansueta versus Mansueta. My apologies if I have grossly mispronounced those names. Mr. Schroeder, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Kent Schroeder. I'm from Corning, Nebraska, and I represent the defendant appellant today, Valerie Mansueta. And you did pronounce it correctly.
Thank you.
Well, the central question today before this court is the valuation date of the marital estate. The dissolution action was filed on April 1 of 2014, and the case was assigned to Judge Wright. Some 50 days later, actually 10 days before the plaintiff's property statement was due, Judge Wright signed an ex parte order excluding Valerie from the marital residence based upon the application of the plaintiff for an ex parte domestic abuse protection order. In essence, Judge Wright preordained the date of valuation in the dissolution case, which later turned out to be based on unfounded allegations contained in the application for the ex parte exclusion order. In Spady v. Spady, the Court of Appeals held that a rational relationship must exist at the time when the valuation date is initially set. The appellant's position today is that May 19th of 2014 is not a valuation date that is rationally related to the property comprising the marital estate. An unfounded order removing the defendant from the marital residence is not the equitable foundation for a date of valuation.
What is the consideration for separation after that date? Did they didn't reside together?
Well, part of the problem is that the prenuptial agreement did not provide for any temporary spousal support. And so Ms. Mansueta moved to the state of Tennessee to live with an adult child. She didn't have any money to stay around in Guardian, Nebraska.
So did they have joint debts that they paid? Did they share income? What rational basis was there a connection?
The rational basis, I think, is very simple. Dr. Mansueta hired an attorney in the state of Alabama who drafted a prenuptial agreement signed by both of the parties 24 hours before they were married. And in that prenuptial agreement, the parties agreed contractually assets acquired during the marriage shall be equitably divided in the event of a dissolution of marriage.
Or separation.
Not separated. That sentence that contains the word separation says separation or decree of marital dissolution. So as Dr. Mansueta, who selected the dissolution action, not a separation action.
But separation is the other side of the disjunctive or. Right?
Pardon?
You have separation or dissolution. So why isn't separation sufficient?
Well, it could be physical, but if it's physical, they're still husband and wife. There would be no decree of legal separation. I mean, I guess they could physically separate, and if something happened to Dr. Mansueta, she would inherit the entire marital estate. And that's why I don't think separation standing by itself means anything. I think what it means is legal separation, so that there would ultimately be then a decree of legal separation. But the point is that that contract, I mean, other than the implied contract of marriage, this is a contract case. And Dr. Mansueta agreed, along with Valerie Mansueta, that all of the assets that were obtained during the course of the marriage would be equitably divided. They were not.
Is it your position that this language in the prenuptial agreement we've been talking about, that it modifies what the law would otherwise be in a dissolution action?
Absolutely. It is the law. That's the contract.
How does it change what the law would be in the absence of a...
Are you talking about the law in Alabama or the law in Nebraska?
Well, whatever law you think applies.
Okay. I think the only thing that it changed... When I attacked the prenuptial agreement, the only attack that I really had on the prenuptial agreement was temporary spousal support. because I thought it was contrary to public policy. Other than that, if you take the entirety of that contract and dissect it, it's really not any different than the law in the state of Nebraska in terms of dividing property.
So if that's the case, if it's not any different than the law of the state of Nebraska for dividing property, then we're back to Judge Funk's question, right, where we're just looking for some rational relationship between the property and the date that the district court chose for valuation.
I simply don't agree with you with respect to that statement.
And why not?
Well, because the date of valuation, it turns out to be, if you abide by the terms of the contract, that all property acquired during the course of the marriage is marital property, then the date of valuation is going to be at or near the date of the trial. I mean, that would be our position, so. case law, pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. Our case law does not clarify when this rational relationship between the valuation date and the marital property must exist. However, the purpose of assigning the date of valuation in a decree is to ensure that the marital estate is equitably divided. The date of valuation determination of the marital and non-marital property and the debt are not interdependent. Each could occur differently. Nevertheless, it stands to reason that before the date of valuation can be determined, the entirety of the marital estate must be first established. Otherwise, there's no rational relationship between the two. There is no hard and fast rule concerning valuation dates, so long as the selected date bears a rational relationship to the property to be divided and selected and reviewed on an abuse of discretion. So that brings me to the bottom line, is that you can't unilaterally throw your spouse out of the marital residence and then ask the court to adopt that as the date of valuation.
Well, it was, you characterized it as unilateral, but there was a court order, correct?
I understand that.
Can you collaterally attack that court order in this proceeding?
Did we?
Ultimately, yes. Can you?
Yeah. Ultimately, that was thrown out. In order to save time and some attorney's fees, she ended up pleading guilty to disturbing the peace.
So how was it thrown out?
Pardon?
How was it thrown out?
It was dismissed. And she ended up pleading to disturbing the peace.
Protection order was dismissed?
Pardon?
The protection order was dismissed?
Yes.
Did she return to the residence after the protection order was dismissed?
No, she was living in the state of Tennessee at that time. Could she have returned to the residence? She could have. But I don't imagine anybody in their right mind would want to walk into a house where your husband had just thrown you out on a party protection order that was full of half lies. So, the bottom line here is that I think this case should be reversed. It should be sent back to the district court and the marital property divided pursuant to the prenuptial agreement.
Mr. Schroeder, I'm a little perplexed about how this argument plays out in a future case. If you're saying throughout the marriage means until literally the marriage is dissolved, wouldn't that include appeal time?
Well, there are many pieces of property in the resolution of a marital dissolution that don't change that much in value. The only thing that really changes in value are possibly 401ks, IRAs, bank accounts, checking accounts, and you can pick a date 30 days prior to that to rely on that.
So aren't the types of assets that you're talking about merely vessels for earnings that came about after separation?
No, not necessarily. I mean, he owned an interest in a building that housed the doctors.
And the building dramatically increased in value?
It did not. It would not. As a matter of fact, what they did, they had an arrangement with the bank where they were actually leasing the property, and they eventually ended up with an ownership interest by purchasing out the lease. So, the only other thing that I would like to bring to the court's attention is we've been accused of unreasonable delays And I must confess, there's probably a little blame to go around in this case, but the bulk of the delay rests with the plaintiff. Plaintiff failed to file a property statement on time, was unable to answer simple questions during a deposition, objected to the defendant's motion to bifurcate, and objected to a majority of the defendant's discovery. And this court sent the declaratory judgment action back and vacated it, and said you had a remedy within the dissolution case itself. I'm having a very difficult time reconciling that with the Humphrey case that says that the practice of bifurcating a dissolution of marriage case in any matter with any time lag is expressly disapproved. Well, I'm trying to figure out, if I go back now in the Mansueta v. Mansueta case, and I'm going to retry the validity of the prenuptial agreement, you try that, I mean, you start out with that, and then the next day take up the divorce case? Because the result, the judge's result, or the judge's decision with respect to the validity or non-validity of the prenuptial agreement might have a heck of a lot to do with the subsequent possible settlement of the case. So I've not quite figured that out. I think it would have been reasonable when you sent the case back as to say that that the bifurcation does not apply to prenuptial agreements and matters such as that, but that did not happen. Finally, the request for attorney's fees, by the time that Judge Wright decided this case, he left the bench, and Judge Marsh heard the attorney fee question upon the affidavits of the counsel, and not having any familiarity with the case, just simply said everybody's to pay their own. And I thought that was an unreasonable result, given the basic deprivation of Valerie Mansueta for any temporary supporter along those lines. It was simply unreasonable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Swanson Murray, good morning to you.
Good morning. Mr. Schroeder, may it please the court. My name is Heather Swanson Murray, and I represent Nicholas Mansueta in this action. This case, as the court is well aware, has taken a long and circuitous path before coming to you today for oral argument. Since the case was filed in April of 2014, Valerie Mansueta filed a separate declaratory judgment action and requested that the court determine that the prenuptial agreement entered into by the parties was not valid. We were here before this court and argued that issue. Ms. Mansueta then filed an appeal in this case regarding denial of her request for summary judgment as to the partial invalidity or validity of the prenuptial agreement which the parties entered, which appeal was eventually dismissed. In the interim, she made no less than 6 requests for an award of some form of temporary spousal support prior to final hearing, eventually being held in September of 2018. During the time that lapsed between April of 2014 and the final hearing in September of 2018, Valerie maintained that the prenuptial agreement that she and Nicholas Mansueta had entered was not valid. In September of 2018, after the trial had already begun, Valerie admitted finally that the prenuptial agreement was in fact valid and enforceable, and requested that the court divide assets and debts pursuant to that prenuptial agreement. Mr. Schroeder is correct that one of the central questions in this case is the valuation date of the marital estate. He is incorrect, however, in the application of the terms of the contract that the parties have entered, as well as the reason that the case had taken as long as it did, which allowed Ms. Mansueta to argue that post-separation assets should in fact be included in the marital estate. Had she not asserted for 4 years that the prenuptial agreement was invalid, we would have gotten to final hearing much sooner than we did, which would have eliminated the confusion and the complexity of Dr. Mansueta acquiring additional assets during the time that the parties had separated.
What are the additional assets that everybody's fighting over?
There were a number of assets that were included on the parties' joint property statement. Judge Wright required that when we filed a joint property statement, we identified property as property that existed before marriage, property that was accumulated during marriage, and property that was accumulated after separation. So there are a number of assets that appear on Exhibit 45, which is the joint property statement of the parties, that are designated as after separation assets acquired by Dr. Mansueta.
Acquired by him solely?
Acquired by him solely with post-separation earnings. There has never been an argument made by Valerie that anything other than post-separation earnings were used to accumulate the post-separation assets.
Post-separation earnings, however, during the course of a marriage?
Yes, during the course of a marriage. However, by the terms of the prenuptial agreement that the parties entered into, the division of property accumulated by the parties was to be divided at separation or dissolution of marriage.
It doesn't say at separation. It says in the event of a separation
or dissolution. In the event
of
a separation, correct, Your Honor.
Does this language change anything about the ordinary marital dissolution law that would apply in the absence of a prenuptial agreement?
I don't think that it does, Your Honor. I think under Nebraska law, the court has the ability to establish a valuation date, as Mr. Schroeder pointed out, that has a rational relationship to the assets. What's important to note in this case is that the parties did not live together as husband and wife, did not use any joint efforts to accumulate any assets or pay any debt. After the entry of the ex parte order that Mr. Schroeder referred to, the ex parte domestic abuse protection order, and the criminal charges that were filed against Valerie Mansueta in May of 2014. I do think it's important to note that Mr. Schroeder was incorrect in his assessment that the protection order was dismissed. It was not. The protection order remained in effect and uncontested by Ms. Mansueta during the one-year period after the entry of that protection order. And also there was a no-contact order as part of the criminal charges against Ms. Mansueta that were resolved shortly before expiration of the ex parte domestic abuse protection
order. Let me return back here, if I may, to first principles and see if we're talking about the same language in paragraph 7. In the event the parties separate or the marriage is dissolved, is that what we're talking about?
That is what we're talking
about.
Okay,
the parties separate, is that a verb? Not like a legal separation.
I think it is a verb.
Okay.
It is.
And what about the next thing?
That is
or
a conjunction.
Or the marriage is dissolved.
Or.
That? Or, yeah, but what is the marriage is dissolved?
The marriage is dissolved would be upon the entry of a dissolution of marriage decree.
So is the first one a legal separation? Or is it just they separate in sort of a colloquial sense?
Your Honor, I believe it is the plain meaning of that language and the plain meaning of the term separate, which, as we have set out in our brief, Webster's Dictionary defines as both to sever conjugal ties with and to cease to live together as a married couple. There can be no dispute that that happened in May of 2014.
So in your view, the first one is a colloquial separate, and the second one is a legal marriage separation.
Correct.
Legal marriage dissolution.
All yes, right. Your Honor.
Thank you.
That is our assertion.
So we've kind of moved to the spousal support language in the prenuptial agreement. With respect to that language, you are arguing that it modified what would otherwise be the default law, correct?
Yes.
And so Judge Wright, the district court, he seemed to analyze this under Nebraska law and say, well, there's a Nebraska statute that permits parties to contract away rights to temporary support. Is Nebraska law the right law to apply here, or does Alabama law apply, given the provision that seems to select Alabama law in the prenuptial agreement?
Your Honor, I believe that Alabama law would be the appropriate law to apply to the contract per the terms of the contract, which state that Alabama law shall apply to the terms.
So Ms. Mansueta's argument that this is void for public policy or some other reasons, we need to look to whether this type of language that you contend contracts away a right to temporary spousal support is enforceable under Alabama law.
Yes.
What authority do you have to help us on that question?
And I have addressed that issue specifically in our brief. Specifically, the grant or the ability of the court to award temporary spousal support in the state of Alabama is a permissive grant under the statutes. It is not an entitlement, and it is not mandatory. It is a permissive grant. There is case law in the state of Alabama that indicates that post-dissolution alimony may be waived. There is also case law that states that alimony during the pendency of a case and alimony after the entry of the decree are to be treated similarly under Alabama law. Although there is nothing that specifically indicates under Alabama law that temporary spousal support can be waived or cannot be waived, because it is both a permissive award under Alabama law and also to be treated similarly as permanent alimony under Alabama law, which can be waived by the parties, it is our position that temporary alimony can also be waived under Alabama law. The application of the specific terms of this contract, again, have the same language with respect to denial of any form of support whatsoever in the event of a separation or dissolution of marriage. The exact same language is used in paragraph 5, where it deals with the support issue, as in paragraph 7, where it deals with the property division issue. One other issue that I think is important to note, and that I didn't necessarily specifically address in our brief, is that Valerie Mansueta acknowledged the validity of the prenuptial agreement at the time of the final hearing. She is therefore equitably estopped from raising issues with respect to that validity when she has already admitted that the contract is in fact valid.
Was her acknowledgement as to validity, you're talking about it at the outset of the final hearing, was that as to the agreement as a whole or just to the property division? Because she had been challenging the spousal support provision throughout, correct?
Correct.
And is it clear that she waived that argument at the final hearing?
The specific language that was used at the time of the final hearing is found on page 155 of the Bill of Exceptions. The court indicated, "I have always understood from the beginning of the case the validity of the prenuptial agreement is an issue." And Mr. Schroeder stated, "Well, it was an issue at one time, but it is no longer an issue." Mr. Schroeder went on to state, which appears on page 156 of the Bill of Exceptions, lines 13 through 15, "We would agree that the prenuptial agreement, Exhibit 44, today is valid and binding." He did not make any qualification with respect to, "We agree that the prenuptial agreement is valid and binding with respect to property division or with respect to any other terms." He acknowledged on behalf of Ms. Mansueta that the entirety of the agreement is valid and binding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time. Your Honor,
I would plead with the court to permit me to explain why I agreed to the validity of that contract. It would be totally and absurdly unfair to the defendant and myself as a practitioner not to share with you how that occurred. We're in trial. Ms. Swanson-Murray offers the prenuptial agreement. I do not object. Judge Wright says, "Aren't you objecting?" I said, "No, I'm not objecting." Well, he said, "We're going to take a brief recess here. We're going to go back into my chambers," which we did. Now, Judge Wright says to me, "Mr. Shorter, are you changing strategy?" And I said, "No, I'm not changing strategy." Well, you did.
Are we talking about things off the record now?
Yeah, we're off the record. We're in his chambers. Judge Wright says we're going to return to the courtroom.
Is that something that you think this court can consider?
I think it's something that this court should hear from a practitioner's standpoint. I was ordered to return to the courtroom and admit that the prenuptial agreement was valid. That's why I made the admission under the order of Judge Wright.
But that is not in the record, is that correct?
Pardon?
But that is not in the record, is that correct?
That is not in the record. But I don't think Ms. Swanson Murray would disagree, because that's exactly what happened.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day is State versus Jessica L. Lang.